Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 54 of the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast. My name is Mark Stevenson from Coldesi.
And this is Mark Vila from Coleman & Company. And today we're here to talk about how to price embroidery and monogramming work.
Right.
Amongst other things.
Yeah, that's true. I like amongst.
Oh, thanks.
I think that's good. Yeah. And we have a guest today, Tom Rumba. Say hello, Tom.
Hi, how's it going?
Tom is now in the marketing department here at Coldesi, and we are blatantly taking advantage of his expertise and his past in actually running a commercial embroidery and printing business. So Tom is the author of an article that you are going to see. Actually, I'm going to call it a small ebook on how to price embroidery and monogramming work. So we thought we would bring him on the podcast before this gets published to give you guys kind of a leg up, right? So that's pretty much the question that we get most on the CAS group.
Yeah, it's a question that we get every single day somewhere, multiple times a day.
Right.
So people calling in to buy supplies from ColemanAndCompany.com, on our Facebook group, in our emails.
Yeah.
And when folks are looking to invest in equipment, salespeople get that question. When I sold embroidery equipment for years, I would get that question asked all the time. Everyone, it seems to be seemingly like a labyrinth of how do I price this work that I'm doing, which is true for any industry, and it's true for, in our industry, direct-to-garment printing and spangles and rhinestones and vinyl and all these other things, but it's hard in a lot of industries. Folks don't normally know well how to charge for their own work.
Yeah, and you're right. It goes to almost every industry, and I think one of the interesting things about the embroidery business or the monogramming business or however you want to talk about this kind of application is that embroidery has been around for so long. There are people that have been in the business for 30, 50 years who absolutely know this is the only correct way to price your work. Mm-hmm. How do I know? I've been in it for 50 years and this is the way I've always priced my work. But the advantage to having Tom here is because he's been in the business for a good amount of time, but he's also got an open mind as far as pricing goes and did some research. So, Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and what makes you such a big shot in figuring out how to price this stuff out?
Well, thank you very much. My name is Tom Rumba, and I've worked in the industry since 1992. That's pretty much when I got to start working for the machine companies, and owned my own shop, a commercial embroidery shop, for years. Had 12 heads and DTG printers and ultimately a big screen print operation also. And,
yeah.
And just absolutely love what I get to do here now. So it's been really good.
That's cool.
So a lot of experience pricing jobs different way. I've worked with schools. I've worked with larger contracts, military contracts, and anything from just walk-ins to. We had a retail location where people could walk in and, you know, how do you price in those situations?
Yes. Too. So I'm gonna ask you a foundation question here, mm-hmm. and that is, do you change your pricing versus, you know, if you have where's the cutoff? So I'm gonna do one hat for somebody. I'm gonna do 12 hats for somebody. I get an order. The military comes in and they want 4,000 name badges. You know, what's the first look at that kind of thing?
Well, there's a couple different approaches that I believe people can have to this. Okay. One approach that's really popular is, this is our price, it's always the price, kind of like you mentioned, and we don't change. This is our price list, we publish it, and everybody pretty much molds to that. And that works up to a certain point. If you have a defined set of business, and that's typically all that you do, that works really well. But what happens is when you get larger jobs or contract jobs or when you're trying to float between the different styles of work that are out there, I always felt it was important to use different pricing models to match up with different types of thing, you know, jobs okay. that you're bidding.
So you would have so one way is just to have a, however you got there, mm-hmm. is to offer a published price list.
Exactly.
This yeah. is everything that we sell, and this is the price. Because I see this debated on the CIS group all the time as well.
Yeah.
Do you publish your price list? Some people yes, some people no.
Right.
So is there like a size range of businesses, or when would you recommend publishing that?
Typically, anything from walk-in business all the way up to, say, 72 pieces is a really good option for a published price list. The what I think is probably the standard method of doing it is what they call keystone pricing.
Okay.
Which, you know, we can get into some specific yeah. details, but keystone pricing is typically done. And that's what most people end up building their price lists off. They kind of start with keystone pricing, which generally pretty much ensures you're gonna make a good profit on that, on almost any job in that range.
Okay.
And then as it, what people can do is they can kind of sharpen it by using other methods. So really, pricing models are good for testing each other a little bit too. If you've got one pricing model that says that comes out with a price that seems low, and you test it with a different model, and then it seems like it should be low, then chances are you know that that price is the correct price, even though maybe it doesn't internally feel right to you. Oh, know?
Okay, so let's go through the models themselves and how you would figure out the pricing.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned keystone. Is that one of the methods that you would use?
Yeah, keystone pricing is good because it allows you a lot of flexibility. Okay, it would be crazy to try and come up with a price list for every single garment that there is in the market. You know, there's literally hundreds of thousands of different garments that are out there. And
right.
so what most people need is a way to base their pricing on the risk that they're taking.
Okay.
So, for instance, if you use the catalog price that most of the wholesalers use is normally it's about double what they're going to actually charge you for the garment. So the way keystoning works is the wholesalers like Sanmar
yep.
Will have a published price list that's their catalog price. But as you're looking at that catalog price, if let's say I'm talking with a customer and it's $22 on the catalog price, I know that generally I'm buying that for $11.
Okay, so when you say keystoning, the first part of that is whatever blank you're going to use,
mm-hmm.
You're going to double what your cost is.
Correct.
So I got a $12 polo. I'm selling that for $24 plus.
Yeah, and part of the reason of leaving that as, I guess, as a standard is because, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, is the risk involved.
Yeah, exactly.
So right. if you're doing jackets that cost you $25 a piece, if you damage one of those jackets, irreplaceably damage it when you're trying to work with it,
yeah.
then you've got to be able to recoup that cost.
You just terrified 1,000 listeners,
yeah.
and they just, don't be afraid, don't be afraid.
Yeah, but if you're yeah. marking each one up $25,
yeah.
and you damage the one that you have to eat that cost now, well, you've made enough profit in some of the others to be able to handle that compared to if you were, say, not keystoning and marking it up by a smaller percentage.
Yeah, see, I like that approach, too, because it's very simple.
Yeah.
You're not doing a lot of math.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not assuming a lot of risk. You know, it's $24. Sanmar will even give you, you know, publish a catalog for you
mm-hmm.
that has their retail pricing in it.
Yeah.
So you can just go through and, hey, here's all the things that you want.
And no. it'll have your logo in it too.
Yeah, so, the whole thing.
So it gives you a more professional appearance to your end user, and it gives you a good starting point. Now, typically with add-on type decoration like we do in this business,
yeah.
you have to take the keystone price. Keystone, by the way, is not uncommon. This is what's done in retail areas all across the country.
Yep.
So if you walk into many stores, keystoning is just a normal thing that gets done.
Okay.
They take whatever the item is, they double it, and that's kind of their starting point.
So does that? So we've talked about the blanks and doubling the price. Does that include the decoration? So do you add on for like thread and backing and things like that? Are you adding on for time, or is that all based in the rolled up into the keystone price?
Typically, what happens is you'll keystone the garment. Okay.
Right.
So that same garment that you're showing to a customer, they're looking at let's say 10 or 12 different garments. They haven't decided. They narrow it down to three that they really like.
Yeah.
And each of those three are kind of different, you know, and they don't know whether to go with the $22 one, the $10 one, or the $15 polo. Which polo do they go with? And
yeah.
So, but you need to make sure that you get a good amount of profit on each of those jobs, regardless of which of those that they pick.
Right.
And you need to be able to account for your risk. So naturally, in the more expensive polo, you're making more.
Yes.
That's just the way that goes. And that's what keystoning is good for, is it protects your risk to the upside.
So in basic keystoning, you're not doing any more math. You're not adding anything else in for labor. You're not adding anything for throughout or backing. All that's rolled in.
Yeah.
Yes? So
quick, down, and dirty. And then what you typically do is you add on to the amount of time it's going to take you to basically a set fee for your embroidery work.
Embroidery charge.
Okay.
So left chest logo. Now, is that flat fee? Like all left chest logos are X amount of dollars?
It is, with the exception that you have to charge according to like how big the order is. So
right.
Quantity breakdowns. Yeah, exactly right.
Okay.
So if, for instance, if somebody brings in one garment that is their own, and your embroidery charge is, let's say, $5 plus keystoning, well,
you make it $1 million because you don't want that job.
Yeah, right.
Now,
do that for just the embroidery charge because you haven't had the opportunity to make the profit on the garment.
You've been in the business, you know, if I want Cole Bessie, you know, I'm wearing a Cole Bessie embroidered shirt right now. Mm-hmm. Keystone, I think straight cost on this was $13 on my shirt that I'm wearing. Mm-hmm. So that's $26 for the shirt.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 4,000 stitch embroidery design. So Keystone, would you just like say I charge $5?
Well, let's say you came in and you wanted one shirt like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd probably do Keystone the garment and then just $20 for, because you're only really bringing me one item.
Okay.
You know, and so that's just the basic cost to get a job done through the, you know, an embroidered job, to load it up, to change out all the threads. There's a certain amount of time, and you've got to pay somebody to do that. And you can only do a couple of those, along with the time it takes to talk to the customer and help them decide. And
yeah, that's something people don't take it. So if you've got this shirt, then this would end up being a $46 shirt.
If it was just one
shirt.
Just
one.
Yeah. Now, okay, if you came and brought that same shirt and we're getting to six, you know, then that would be maybe a $10 embroidery charge on top of that. And if we're getting to 12, now we're getting down. Now I can get it down to around $6 plus the Keystone price.
Okay. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So I see. So you can build some sort of a structured pricing where you're going to say you're going to double the price of every garment.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have an embroidery charge. And that's going to be maybe one, then maybe two to six, and then maybe six to 12, and so on. You got to figure out some of yours. And part of what the customer needs, or the part of what who's listening here, the listeners here need to understand, is that part of that is not just the machine runtime, but the customer interface time that you're having to deal with, which is why the cost goes down. When they're ordering 30, you're interfacing them with probably almost the same amount of time as if they're ordering one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Longer, if any, you know.
Probably
if
longer.
Somebody's just getting one shirt done, they're just really paying crazy attention to what happens.
Yeah.
So the other reason I like that model is that you're discouraging work you don't want. You know, like honestly, unless it's a regular customer or part of a strategy, or this is your business, is this ultra customization, you don't want to stop your day and do a one-off.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not worth your time unless they pay through the nose for it.
And then that's part of your, and it could be part of your strategy, is that you do one-offs.
Yeah.
Therefore, and then also a couple things to break down. I like in this one question and then one thought. So $46 for the shirt that you're wearing right now.
Yeah.
Is not even unreasonable if you consider if I had to go to Macy's or Dillard's or one of those places and buy a similar shirt that had a branded logo on it.
Yes, that's true.
Exactly. Right.
So for one, it's reasonable just on that thought alone.
And wait, by the way, I know people are going to ask. I'm wearing an S608. That is, if you go to sanmar.com, you can look it up.
And then the question I had is, in this model, would you put a cap on the number of stitches allowed for this price model? So would you say, like, up to 12,000 or 15,000 stitches to make sure somebody doesn't bring in some really weird logo that turns into a hot mess for you?
Right, exactly right. And I actually kind of addressed this a little bit later on in the article, too,
about
the price per 1,000 stitches.
Yeah.
For embroidery and monogramming work, because that is a common way that pricing is done in the industry. And quite honestly, my look at that is a little bit different. I've done the time and materials studies to really take a sharp look at that. And so some people, absolutely, if it's 2,000 more stitches, they want to get, you know, that extra buck for those 2,000 extra stitches. But it takes the same amount of time to hoop up and load up and walk away from a machine that's doing 7,000 stitches as it does to hoop up and load up and walk away from a machine doing 10,000 stitches.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so if you're busy with customers and you've got other things to do anyway, yes, there's an amount of how quickly can you cycle that shirt, but from a human perspective, you're really, whether it's a 30,000 stitch logo or a 10,000 stitch logo, the human amount of time
I really like that. So, because we talk about that in DTG all the time as well, is if you're looking at an M2 and printing four small designs or an M6 and printing 12, it's not really how fast it prints, it's what you can do while it's printing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, because it's a set it for and forget it, it's a great perspective in multi-head. So, What you're talking about when you talk about keystoning is you double the cost of the garment, and then you've got almost a flat rate.
It's technically called keystone plus pricing,
according
to the article. And I've got some really good examples for people that go to the podcast and check the links out below.
You can download the
PDF. I think this is, when I read the article, this is the one I immediately just felt was the right way to do it. Because, for one, I'm not big in, when it comes to pricing things, and which I have to deal with a lot on our website, I'm not big on the idea of, if I'm just going to say it to embroidery, this embroidery job, was 6,552 stitches, and this one was 7,208, and this one was 4, that I need to necessarily charge such a difference on those.
Yeah.
I like this flat rate because in the scheme of things, you're going over time, you're going to have an average for your left chest logos, and it's going to balance out. And for the most part, folks who own one or two or four heads, it's the time difference when you add it up over the course of doing 72 garments or whatever it is not... It's not this massive number. You're not doing tens of thousands. If you can shave 100 stitches off of 100,000 logos you have to sew out, if you can shave 100 stitches off, that's a lot of time.
Right.
However, if you're doing 12, what's really the difference in your time going to be in the overall span of the job?
You know what else I like about that is that, honestly, some logos are just freaking hard to sew out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And others are cake, and it has nothing to do with the number of stitches in them.
Right.
You could go through one logo that somebody brings you that was poorly digitized, or maybe it's just like the square Cold Essie logo.
Right.
It's just hard.
Right.
And so you get more thread breaks.
Mm-hmm.
It takes longer regardless. It's got more color changes, so it takes longer. There are a variety of things having nothing to do with stitch count.
Right.
That are adjusted in this Keystone Plus pricing. But the hard question is, how much is a left chest logo?
Well, that kind of depends on all of those factors that we talked about, really.
So Keystone pricing, a dozen order, how much would you charge for a left chest logo? Sight unseen.
Sight unseen. On what kind of garment?
A polo.
A polo. Okay. How much is the polo?
PK cotton. $12. $12
a
sandbar.
There's a whole bunch of questions.
I'm looking for the plus pricing. Because the folks that are listening to this, a lot of them aren't in the business anymore.
Okay.
So it's always great. Like, I see logos on the I see the FedEx truck logo.
Right.
That's what I see. So left chest logo.
So left chest logo, typically if it was 6 to 12 pieces, which Yep. It's kind of rare that you're getting under six pieces unless you have a retail shop where people are, you know, driving by and can see your shop and so on and so forth.
Yep.
So 6 to 12 or more pieces up to 72, generally anywhere from $6 to $4.50 on the low end. So
okay.
If I had a particular customer that I was trying to get in with and I wanted to give them a good deal so that I could start doing their work, or if it's maybe a in our case, we used to do a lot of volunteer work, so if it was somebody that I was wanting to help out from a volunteer standpoint, then we would do less. But you know, as long as you're getting your keystone for the garments, you know that you're covering your profits and your typically your overhead and your cost
that.
There. And, you know, $6 to $4 and in some jobs it, you know, if it's a little less than that, that's your judgment because you know that you're getting your money on your keystone.
We did another podcast. I think we did another podcast. This is number 54. That talked about the long-term value of a customer when you price it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like what you just said. Maybe you shave a little bit off if you think it's going to lead to something long.
Yeah, and right. What's beautiful about this model is your cost per thousand stitch, quote unquote, if you're thinking about it that way, because some folks listening to this have been told that 9 times and they've been struggling with trying to price with that model.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking, then if they look at it and they say, well, if a Luck Chest logo has 10,000 stitches and you're charging like $5, that's 50 cents for every thousand. I was told to do $1, you know, and you're challenging yourself with convincing your customer why you need to charge per thousand stitches and all of this stuff that they're not going to understand or care about. However, when you're pricing with this Keystone model and you've got a flat rate, mostly
Keystone
for the works.
So we've got an early favorite.
I mean, obviously,
we have an early favorite.
Well, what I like about it is that you get to sell on the garment and you get to sell all the benefits of better garments to increase your profits.
Yeah.
So you can turn around and they want to buy a cheap shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You turn around, you sell them the benefits of, well, if you get this collared shirt that's got these materials and it's got stain blocker and it has all these things that you can upsell on, you've got a whole list of marketing materials provided from the manufacturer. Your customer's going to be happy when they spend more money because they're going to get a nicer garment. You've made more profits, and you didn't have to spend any time doing any math or explaining to them about these thousand stitches. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm gonna do one more thing, and then we'll move on to the next pricing model. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be my not-so-subliminal message that I'm going to say that people are going to argue with, and that is don't embroider on other people's stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, somebody wants to bring you 10 shirts from Walmart, just tell them no. Because especially if you're using the Keystone model, all you're going to do is get the embroidery upcharge of $5 or $6 to do the logo. You're going to screw one up. Somebody's going to bring you the pillow that their grandmother handmade and asked you to embroider their daughter's name on it. And, you know, there's an unlimited amount of emotional liability to something like that.
And then Walmart doesn't have any more of that size.
Yeah.
You're calling up 6 different stores trying to get a replacement.
And it shrinks, and you didn't, and the color runs, and you didn't know, and you know all this stuff.
There is all sorts of challenges to using other people's garments, and in our case, we would take them.
Okay? Yeah.
That's what we did. Everybody's different, but they were with clear expectations up front. You know, that if something. If a thread breaks or if something bleeds, it's on them. You know, if there's a mistake, we don't cover that because
it's their stuff.
Yeah, and we would get more for it. Like, for instance, I would then add additional monies. I wouldn't do Keystone Plus pricing.
Okay.
I would, that was, you know, easily $12 to $15 per garment if they brought them to us. And most people would find out, like, what you'll often have is you'll have people that will want to ask, like, get your pricing, and then they'll say, well, what if I bring the garments? And their goal, their end goal is to go to try and save a couple bucks by going and buying them themselves for cheaper.
Yeah.
And if you allow that to happen, then you're not, you know, they save money by allowing you to make some garment on the profit of the garment, too.
Yeah.
That's how you get your embroidery pricing down, is by them allowing you to make money.
I get that.
So Keystone Plus pricing is really good. There's some caveats to it, which I talk about in the article. You have to go to the article to get that. Number one is, what do you do when the jobs get bigger and there's a different model that is better for larger jobs?
Yep. So let's talk about one of the other models. What's your choice to talk about next time?
So the very next go-to pricing model for pricing embroidery, machine embroidery work, is what we call time and materials. And this is also, again, Keystone is tried and true in the retail industry. Time and billing is tried and true in the manufacturing and the construction industry.
Okay.
So, you know, we all know what that means. What's the time and materials? And embroidery has a unique perspective on this, okay? Because unlike construction, where the majority of the costs are in the materials, with embroidery, the majority of the costs are in the labor.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is why I come back to that point I was making about how it takes the same amount of time to hoop up and let a machine run, you know, however many thousand stitches it is, because, you know, that's the same amount of time. Well, with construction, you put thousands and thousands of dollars into, let's say, a marble floor.
Yeah.
You know, and then you pay somebody the equivalent of, you know, whatever.
Labor installation.
$200 to put it down for you.
Yeah.
So it's almost the reverse in embroidery. Thread, backing, needles, things like those are not your largest cost drivers.
As negligible cost.
As Mark can tell.
Yeah. So, tripping over pennies.
I think. We have that podcast.
Yeah.
And we had a customer tell us that he spent like 45 minutes going through all the backing to determine all the price per square inch so he could figure out how much he would need to charge for it. And then we got him on the phone, and he's like, so all of your backing is between like 0.004 and 0.005 cents per... He's like, why is there not much of a difference? I was like, it's not
because
much
it doesn't
of a cost.
Matter, yeah.
Yeah, and it's I said, if you want matter. It bigger, it's just like you get the size that's convenient for you because it's the time that's going to matter. Is cutting out 8x8 squares the right for your job with the employees you have?
Honestly, somebody that goes through that kind of exercise doesn't value their time at all.
Yeah.
So cutting out the 8x8 squares is fine. Because they're going to do stuff, because that would be more useful than doing the math on backing and trying to figure out
what's cheaper. Well, quite honestly, that's the advantage of listening to you guys every week, is because there's lots of tips and tricks that can save time.
Yeah.
You know, why go through these exercises that so many people before you have gone over, and they know that, hey, this is not worth doing. You know, one of the little tricks or tips that I'll give to anybody listening is that you don't want to find the cheapest thread and backing and needles that you can find. You actually want to find the very best needles and thread and backing, because as a percentage, it's such a small percentage of your overall time and materials costs. Right. So if for instance, let's say to do 1,000 pieces, it's going to cost me $25 to get the cheapest backing I can get and the cheapest thread I can get, and maybe I'm going to have 500 more thread breaks as a result of it, wouldn't I have loved to have spent that extra $5?
And it is $5.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So to make it $30 on a $10,000 job to not have those 500 extra thread breaks by the time the job's over with.
Yeah, absolutely.
So without a doubt, get the very best. Don't worry so much. As long as you got a good supplier that's got good fresh threads, good fresh backing, good, you know, the quality of that material is good, you know, plug the hole in a company for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll tell you the problem with a lot of people, and this is honest right here, and if you're listening to this, the chances are you're guilty of this, is that you're thinking in your credit card limit and balance because it's hard managing finances in a business versus considering the big picture of
the
job.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
You're considering, like, you've got a credit card here and you really don't want to put more than $300 on it for this $15,000 job you're about to do, over the course of a few months, and you're buying all the thread for it. So you're trying to figure out, how can I save $17? on something that's worth $10,000 to you. That $17 is what one shirt you messed up
it's
on.
A mind, it's a mindset.
Yeah, it's a mindset. So you move the mindset out of what is this charge that I'm putting on my credit card, mm-hmm. and into the mindset of how much, like you said, how many thread breaks can I save? You know, by getting fresh needles. I know that the box of needles is $20. I don't want to charge it $20, but that's a ton of needles. Mm-hmm. You know how many garments will 100 needles go through?
Yeah, and sometimes people will have a bent needle and they'll just sit in there and work that bent needle for an hour.
Ridiculous.
You know, because they're afraid.
I mean, if that's the only needle left in your state,
there you go.
So Tom, so we're kind of talking around this.
Yeah.
Walk us through pricing using time and material.
Yeah.
So time and materials is typically done on jobs that are, I'm going to throw a number out there, let's say 72 pieces or above, okay, because at that point you're really maybe somewhere in 50 and above on really high-priced garments. Keystoning gets expensive on the more expensive garments, okay? So let's take a $50 Nike polo that costs you $45. So you keystone that bad boy,
and it's going
to be $85, $90, yeah. which some people are more than willing to pay to get that mm-hmm. Nike brand. But if you're bidding that out against two or three other embroidery shops and you're thinking, well, hey, you know, I'm using this keystone pricing, and why am I $20 more expensive?
Yeah.
It's because the overall number grows faster with the price of the garment. So you have to back that down. You know, on big jobs and on really expensive garments, you now need to kind of shift into a time and materials mode.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is now what you do is you have some inclination of what your costs are, okay? And you break that down, and I talk about this more in the article too, but so definitely download the article. It shows you how to break down the costs of your expenses, your overhead expenses, and the expenses for your labor, and how to relate that into each hour that you're running your equipment. Okay, so
right. Because the job is now big enough to take hours and hours or weeks mm-hmm. to do, so you're figuring out how, you know, what's it cost you to keep this is the job that you're going to do.
Yeah.
So how much does it cost me to keep my doors open, to employ people, what are my taxes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can do those numbers in advance to figure out what your cost of operation is an hour. And then you do the math backwards to figure out how many
yep.
pieces you can put out?
Yeah, basically. So, for instance, if your fixed costs are, let's say, $14.50 per month and your shop is open for about 40 hours a week, yeah, you know, in this case it works out to about 173 hours a month of which those expenses need to be divided out to. And when you kind of work that number backwards, you know, again, we're working with $1,450 a month, that works out to about $8.38 per hour of what we call fixed expenses. And we kind of talk about fixed expenses, which are those expenses which are, they do not vary according to the job. They don't vary according to, you know, what work you're actually getting. And then there's what they call variable expenses, and variable expenses are those costs which change depending on the job. So a typical variable expense would be the price of the garment. So, mm-hmm. you know, Mark, let's say you buy a particular garment that's $22.
Right.
That's my variable expenses. Other Mark here purchases this, you know, a different garment, same job, same embroidery, same everything, except his garment is now $36. He wants a premium garment.
So. He's a little bougie.
Yeah, I try.
So you can see those are your variable expenses. Now, does that mean that the fixed price of your machine changed that month? If you're doing Mark A's job as opposed to Mark B's job, mm-hmm. you know, has it
right now? You still got maybe the equipment lease payment. Mm-hmm. You've still got your electric. You've still got your rent for your space. Mm-hmm. You've still got to pay the accounting people and mm-hmm. yourself.
Yeah,
is like the labor that it takes to run the machine a variable expense in that? Or those, since you've got the employee there every day anyway?
That's a really good question, and you really need to kind of approach that from two different angles, okay? If you have people that you have more or less committed to that X number of hours per week, that you're going to provide them with that amount of work, and you know, come heck or high water, you're going to find a way to get them employed.
You got a full-time employee or two or four.
Right, and then you can kind of roll those into your fixed expenses and make those your fixed expenses whenever you're doing your time and billing calculation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then just add your variable costs on top of that. So now the price of the garment and any unique extra services it's going to take for that customer. Like if they want you to bag them and box them and to do, you know, package them in a certain way too. Mm-hmm.
So
you got to figure all those costs in there too.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let's look at a job that's coming in that's 144 pieces. Mm-hmm. So you're going to do the time and materials price model.
I'm at least going to spot check it.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to take whatever it takes to keep the lights on money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those are your fixed expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the result in the example that you used?
Well, so then what you do is you would be surprised what that number is each hour that you work the machine. Like in the case of $1,450.50, which is what I typically think an average single head or two head operation is running in expenses each month, and that, you know, that includes the operator. It's only $8 an hour, and you know, these machines can make $50 to $80 an hour even on a single head machine.
Yeah. By the way, we're still getting used to saying two head, because the Avance 1502 is about to hit the streets, so we've been thinking a lot about it.
Yeah, exactly right. So.
So you said like $8 an hour, $10 an hour, something like that.
In the example I gave, it was $8.38 an hour.
Yeah.
And so let's say you're pricing that job and you're competing with two or three other people. You know, are you, and maybe you've had this price list that you've used for years, but you know, it turns out that you keep losing jobs by a couple dollars here and there. You know, when you do a time and materials billing, you may say to yourself, hey, you know, I think it's okay for me to only make $65 an hour for this job, you know, rather than my normal $67 an hour I might want if I use this other pricing model. So you have to be heads up about it. This part of business is making good decisions at the time.
I like that.
And sticking to something.
And I'm going to posit the same thing that I said earlier about the long-term value of the customer.
Mm-hmm.
That these are things that are going. So it seems like the time and materials method is also a good way to make sure you're not losing money.
Yeah, it's
a good defensive position.
Yeah, it's a good defensive position. And also, if you're doing this method and you realize that you say, based on what I'm thinking, it costs me this much to run my business. I want to be able to make at least this much an hour running my business, and then I know this is a safe number to sell. What's interesting about that is if you're doing different pricing models and you're sticking to your guns in those pricing models and your machine is not running and you're sitting there quiet, then you should probably do some math of what if my machines were running longer and I was making a little bit less per hour.
Right.
Right. Because that math works.
Unless you're happy with the money you're making and you're happy working 10 hours a week and your price model's fine and everything's fine, then everything is fine. You don't have to listen or change anything. But if you want to make some more money and you're only running your machines 30 hours a week and you're trying to get in an extra 10 or 15, this is a good way, I think, to get into that model safely.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Time and materials does two great things. It really does give you an absolute true test for that particular job on the downside. If you're bidding and bidding, bidding contracts, and every year it seems they get lower and lower and lower and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, time and materials will let you say, hey, you know, every other job you do in your shop is you're making $65 an hour, but on this one customer, they've worked you down so much that you can't seem to make more than $30 an hour on their jobs. Mm-hmm. Time and materials billing will help you cut that person loose, because you'll realize that if you had spent the same 10 hours working that job going out and finding another good customer, those are 10 hours you can recoup to use that time to dump into your sales activities.
So here's another marketing thing that I think most small businesses don't think of. Although by the time you're ready to use this pricing model, I'm not entirely sure that you'd still be qualified as a really small business, right? Because you're doing the bigger jobs, and that is kind of the the economic cost and the opportunity cost of taking a lower paying job. Mm-hmm. So like what Tom just said is, you know, you might look at these bigger jobs and, you know, it's been competitive, so you've shaved your pricing down to a point. Well, you also have to look at what else could I do in those hours? In other words, am I pushing off a more profitable job or a set of more profitable jobs in order to take this? Or how much money can I make if I go door to door? Or if I'm on the phone the whole time, you know, or, you know, so what is the opportunity cost behind these things?
Right.
Are there other ways that you could be making money instead of doing this job?
Right.
And at Keystone Plus pricing, I don't have a problem with that conversation because it's almost always going to be, this is what I should be doing right now.
Yeah. Right. Well, and that's what's scary about owning a small business is oftentimes you have to make decisions of doing things that aren't going to make you money right now. Mm-hmm. And they're risks. The risk-reward type of a thing where it's like, okay, I'm going to turn down this job where I could have made $35 an hour, and instead I'm going to go hit the streets, or I'm going to learn Facebook marketing, Google marketing. And it's like, I could spend all this time learning how to Google search marketing. Am I going to make any money, and how long is it going to take?
Yeah.
I'll take the $35 an hour.
Yeah, but
it feels safer.
Yeah. I think that what it also does is, you know, I mean, it keeps people from undervaluing themselves, which happens all the time.
And what we discovered in retail areas or retail shops,
mm-hmm.
There's good in the fact that people are driving by and they're walking in, and sometimes they've got 50 pieces they want to just drop on you because you are like right there as they go to work every day. So
yeah.
They're going to drop those orders on you. But then you've also got every time somebody walks in your shop, you're spending an hour with them a lot of times. You know, even that one item that they want to bring you from their shirt, they want you to do it for $5 to $10,
mm-hmm.
but by the time you spend that 1 hour, when you could have been hooping up the next garment,
I'm already losing money.
You can't really get this $50, $60 you're getting at every other case. So that what happens when you do time and materials, you really end up seeing how expensive it can be to do those onesie twosies,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you end up shooting for higher marks.
All right, so it hasn't replaced my favorite, you know, but so far time and materials really. So we talked about Keystone Plus,
Keystone Plus, and materials,
and both seem logical, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
they both have a place. And for the time and materials, you can just figure out what your base cost is once. And then adjust it for if you hire somebody or if you increase your space. It's not like you have to do that math every day.
Right.
You know, you find out it costs me $40 an hour to do a job,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then work.
And here is the beauty. This is one of the things, and I actually heard the owner of Cold Essie recently say this, is that when you add on additional equipment, what you're effectively doing is you're taking your fixed costs and you're dividing them up into more heads. So if your fixed costs are $14.50 and you've got one embroidery machine covering that cost, you've got to make a higher number than if you've got two heads covering that cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, making the decision to go for that two head or that four head up, you know, sometimes up front, makes a lot of sense because you're now dividing your fixed cost by four heads instead of by one head.
Yeah. So you're
effectively per hour of running time reducing your costs by twice or by four times as little.
There's no more obvious ROI change than when you go from a single head machine to a two head machine.
And
it's double.
And I'm willing to bet that if you were financing or leasing or something like that, you're not doubling.
No, definitely not.
Right.
Okay, so we got Keystone Plus, we've got time and materials. I know there's one more that you had in the article.
There's a couple others. There's of course the price per thousand stitches, but I view the price per thousand stitches because everybody's got a number out there. And if that's the way you want to price, there's plenty of places all over the web to find a number for that people just tend to charge.
What is it usually?
I'm gonna
make you say one.
Oh, gosh, you know what? I never really did it that much. Yeah, so a lot of times it's
dollar per thousand.
But it's varied. I mean, it used to be more than that. Yeah, it's about a dollar per thousand stitches, so that puts a 7,000 stitch logo at $7, you know, but then you also need to figure out what are you going to make on the garment,
yep.
you know, and so Now everybody's got a different formula for that. If you're not keystoning the garment, but you're charging $7, sometimes $7 on 50 shirts plus keystoning is a bit much. You know?
Okay.
So you gotta consider that.
Okay. So what else do you have?
So the price per thousand stitches, it's not even a good way to determine time and materials that way. I mean, price per thousand, you can't really relate your time and materials to a per thousand stitches because that varies. That varies by thread break. It makes it so radically different that it's tough. So that is within the scheme of what is used in business. It's called price to market.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this is like what I consider my third check on my pricing. So keystone pricing, I know, is generally good between, you know, anywhere from a dozen to six or seven dozen shirts.
Yeah.
I need to start shifting into a time and materials mode if I'm going to go above that or if I'm going to go dramatically below that. But then what I also have to consider is I have to consider price to market. And price to market basically means what is the market bearing out there? Okay, and that can vary a lot by area. That can vary a lot by what kind of competition you've got. And so all of these pricing models fit within the realm of price to market. In other words, if you open up a terrific shop and you set your pricing but you never win any jobs,
right?
You know, then you're going to have to adjust somewhere. You're going to have to either go find a niche market that can get the pricing you want to get, or you're going to have to price to market. Now, the beauty of price to market is that people that have determined the market price in your area, you know, probably they know what they're doing.
Okay.
You know? So you have to consider that they may know something that you don't know. So you calculate your costs, but maybe everybody else is a dollar lower. Well, maybe they've learned that the type of work that they get in this area, the type of jobs that get done, you know.
See, what I think is really interesting is when you talk about price to market, you're talking about finding kind of the lowest the lower price that people charge.
Not really. It's determining what the average is for the area that you're in, and I'm going to say being aware of it.
Okay.
People really have hard feelings on this sometimes because they feel like, well, if I give an inch, then the next guy gives an inch, the next guy gives an inch, and everybody goes into a downward spiral. And in theory, that is true, but it doesn't happen that way in practice.
Well,
in practice,
this is
generally people try to hold their price.
Yeah, this is capitalism here.
Yeah, that's
what that's what is safe about that is that in the short term, in particularly niche markets, you will get that where it will spiral, boom, it'll fall to the bottom, and then it rises back up again.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you are in a busier area and there's embroidery shops of all sizes, then it's a mature market. You can feel safe if the market is holding a particular price, that there are people staying in business.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something that I read in the article you mentioned about approaching businesses that are like yours. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Like, meaning, like, you can't price yourself as a two-head shop compared to the shop that has 70 heads.
Right. That is exactly the case. Like, what typically happens is somebody maybe doesn't have as many heads.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe they got a one-head machine.
Okay? Yeah.
And sure enough, they're a good friend of theirs, works for the high school, they're maybe the PTA president, and they go to bid this job, and they find out, wow, you're $5 more expensive than anybody else out there.
Well, yeah.
You know, what if five shops in the area all have 8 heads, 12 heads, you know, and they've got that better ROI calculation, okay? Generally, that's not necessarily a bad thing because what you can do is you can peck around and you can find out the types of jobs that are going to be great for you. You generally will find out in some of these bigger shops that they're maybe not doing the same quality level. So there's definitely angles for you to make your money. Everybody has to start somewhere.
And I like that because we talk about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, are the people that listen to the CAS podcast are smaller shops. They've got one or maybe two machines in whatever category that they're in,
mm-hmm.
whether it's embroidery or printing or vinyl or whatever it is. So the odds that they're going to be the cheapest one that is ever going to approach the local high school or the local electric company or the biggest university or whatever it is really low. Right. You know, so we've got all kinds of podcasts on finding those niche markets. Like, what if you're the only embroidery guy that addresses the Hispanic market in your area on a personal level? You know, you make those personal connections and you get more money for it.
Right.
And what I like about what you're saying is you know, as long as you're offering the same price on average as everybody else, and you're a nice guy or girl, and you deliver on time, and you smile, and you answer the phone, you have a shot at the business. What I don't like about it, because when I think about market pricing, what I think about is setting the market and charging just as much as I can possibly think of, and then wait for people to say no, and then drop it by 50 cents.
Right.
And then do that again and wait for people to say no and then drop it. So you're finding, for me, market pricing is finding the highest possible price that you can charge for what you're doing. You know, all the while doing that math. So if you lose a job, you've got to do, okay, well, what are my fixed costs? You know, am I missing out on a job? Or am I better off just saying no and going out and finding more of those high profit potentials?
Right, which is why our customers love you're not in charge of pricing anything here.
Exactly. Well, you should know what people are charging in your area.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm trying to get at, particularly with somebody just starting out. You probably will be encouraged by it. You know, you might find that as you talk to other embroidery shops and what I have found in almost 20 years now of doing this is that people are willing to talk to you. I mean, whether it be at shows, whether it be at different events that you go to or see people out and about, they're generally interested in your business, even if they're a competitor of yours. And very often you can find that one thing you do really well that the other person would love to have somebody to subcontract that to.
Yeah,
and so I like that
there
a lot.
There is no need in this industry to be so predatory.
Yeah,
like patches. A lot of people say no to patches because they haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah,
you know. So you've got a patch kit. Maybe you got the Avance and Patch Kit Pro Bundle, and that's your niche.
That's your niche.
We have customers that just do patches and using our patch kits and materials and stuff like that, and they do particularly well because they actually get other jobs in because they say yes.
Yeah.
And then it turns around, they're doing. So we have customers that they regularly buy patch material and we'll ask them, they're like, oh, do you do a lot of patches? They're like, I do an okay amount of patches. However, I do a lot of business because I do patches.
Yeah, right.
Just kind of using that as an example.
Thing. What was the thing? The clamp thing?
The Coleman clamp. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, we've got a couple of new bundles for the Avance. One is the Ultimate Monogram Bundle. And that includes the Coleman clamp. It includes a special for flex fit caps, for unstructured caps, the Durkee hoop, and it includes, I can't remember what
fast
the other,
frame.
The fast frames. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, so this, maybe this is your specialty, is that you do custom sneakers. Maybe your specialty is monogramming.
Yeah, monogramming does well.
You know, so whatever that is, you've got the expertise, you can do it fast, you can do it well, and that's what you advertise that you do.
And that allows you to step out and set a standard for a market price on something because you're unique in there. And it allows you to step out of the market price when you're competing against shops that got 20 heads. Especially if you're in a big city, you know, you're going to run into a decent amount of those, but they're going to say no to the patches, or they're going to say no to the six-piece jobs, or whatever it might be.
Right, or maybe it's even market positioning, and it's a little off topic, but let's say that you bill yourself as a monogramming business. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. So when people look that up in your area, they're not looking for embroidery shops, they're not looking for custom polos, they're looking for a monogramming business, and that's you. So you may charge a little bit more, but you know what? This is my specialty.
Mm-hmm.
Is my specialty is patches, my specialty is hats or monogramming or whatever it is. So good opportunity to do my version of the market pricing.
Yeah, and so as far as the price per thousand stitches, which is the other pricing model that I kind of talk about also, is that for embroidery and monogram services, is it's within the realm of pricing to market. In other words, it's within the realm of being aware of what other people in your area are charging. Because chances are it's going to be okay for you, it's going to be good for you, and not anything to really stress about, and be flexible. I think that people a lot of times miss opportunities, big opportunities even, because they're not flexible, you know. Okay. When you are trying to get into two or three big high schools, or you're trying to get into a corporation that you know would be a juicy job for you to have, you got to be flexible. You got to give a little bit on the front end, knowing that two or three orders, they get to see your quality of your work. They begin to compare you against anything else they had in the past, and it's better. They're going to want to pay
long-term value,
right? Not, you know, it was not unusual for us occasionally to throw out a loss leader,
right?
Mm-hmm. Or donation. There were plenty of times when I felt, if we can do these 144 polos,
yeah,
we'll provide two banners for
right.
your company, and I would order up a couple banners and they would get to promote their ball team.
Yep.
And in the meantime, I walked away with 144 piece order. You know,
and
at the same price anybody else would have charged, but it don't, you know.
Yeah, and the other
dollars less on banners.
The other part of that is, you know, is that something that happens every year? Mm-hmm. You know, so am I going to get that business every year? Can I put a business card or a flyer in the box for everyone that you're giving one of these shirts to?
Right.
Can I sign anyone up in your organization, you know, on my email list?
Yep.
Can you say that I'm the official embroiderer for, you know, for this organization? Mm-hmm. So that's a really good point. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and I make a point in the article too about volume, about how volume can affect your pricing and how it can allow you to get even more jobs and how if you stay consistent at it and you keep going, work begins to push to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, somebody that just sticks it out long enough. Eventually, 2-3 years into it, you begin not to have to go sell every job. Stuff just starts coming to you because
right.
they hear about you, they find out about you, and
you get repeat orders.
You just don't make any decisions about what you're going to do with your business until you get a good 2 years into it, because that's when it starts to get juicy. That's when it really gets good.
That's really interesting, and I think what's cool about this whole discussion and talking about some of these models is then you get. As you're deciding what your pricing is going to be, you also, as for people listening, this being small shops, you get to kind of pick some of your areas of expertise in addition to your niche. Your niches.
Yeah.
So when we discuss, you know, a big shop who can do cheaper, they might not do small jobs. They might not do as good of a quality. They
yeah.
might not offer as large of a as flexible a selection of garments because they have these barriers that come up as a big shop.
We in our case, routinely, we did more than 15% subcontract work mm-hmm. to other embroidery and or screen print shops.
Yeah.
People that do very nearly what I do, but not in certain markets, not in certain niches. And
okay.
a good 15% of our business was that. And that's just the idea of being flexible
yeah.
and being open to what comes your way.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get discouraged if you're just starting your business or, you know, if you plan to start in your house or you're still a small business, because you have some amazing opportunity in niches. And, you know, I just thought of one example. So my daughter got engaged recently, so she's going to get married. And I was just thinking, you know, if they had things monogrammed, like if it was handkerchiefs, it was something on the wedding placement, if it was gifts for the groomsmen or the bridesmaids, like, are you really going to trust that to some big embroidery shop that you don't know or you've never done business with? You know, are you going to trust it to a specialty shop? Maybe.
Yeah.
Are you going to trust it to somebody that is in your town that you know, that you can go and see, that comes and talks to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that level of trust for some of these jobs
mm-hmm.
that is, not only is it great for long-term business, but it's really profitable.
Yeah, and you got to build value. I think that is the best advice I try to give to folks who are trying to figure out how to make money, how to price their jobs. It's like, and we have a customer experience podcast,
yeah.
which is kind of all about building value, but why don't you become an expert on all the different types of apparel in a catalog? maybe not all of them, but you dwindle down what your catalog is going to be.
Yeah.
Like through Sanmar, and then you pick, all right, I'm gonna be willing to work with these 30 garments. Be an expert on all of them. Know, like, you know, what are the ones that come in different colors, and which are the moisture wicking styles, and which ones are the light ones, and which ones iron easy.
Yeah.
And all of these things. So when you're talking to customers, you can become an apparel consultant.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, what shirt are, yeah, I'm going down the road and they're going to do the shirts for $35 a piece and you're trying to sell them for $40. Mm-hmm. Well, what are they going to put it on? And then they mention the garment and you know it's a popular garment because you've gotten to know what the really popular garments are.
Yeah, right.
And you say, oh, yeah, I know that shirt. Like, they're fine. It's fine. You know,
here's what I like.
They'll shrink a little bit.
Yeah.
You're fine with saving the $5, you know, but you're going to get that polo shrinks a little bit.
Yeah.
So make sure you buy bigger ones. Unless, I'll tell you what, though, if you don't want to deal with one that shrinks, this one here is a pre-shrunk one, or just the fabric it's made out of, and it comes in more colors. You can
embroidery is going to be softer on the back of this one. It's going to feel better
when it's going to wash better. You talk with all of these things. You become a consultant. You become an expert. Mm-hmm. Then they can begin to trust you. Because you're providing them a lot of information, and even if you're going to go over there, you know, that shirt's just not as good, and that's fine. You know, I just want you to know, you know, you understand that.
This is what I would do.
This is what I would do. I would probably order them, some of them a little bit bigger, but I know it's ambiguous because it depends. Are they shorter? Are they taller?
Right.
Are they wider? Right. Are they broad shoulders?
These are European sizes. It doesn't really.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're gonna get.
But I think it's great if you become an expert and build value in everything that you do, and that goes down that customer experience, because we talked about the bagging and boxing, which you mentioned earlier.
Sorry,
how that's a cost, but that allows you to mark up differently as well when every polo that the company orders comes in an individual bag and box and a tag and a thank you note and all these things. So all your employees get a good experience.
That's a unique thing, because that is a cost. But that also is a moneymaker. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is that when you put labels all around your boxes, and those boxes, you know, basically sit in some resource officers, you know, office for the whole year, and everybody that walks into that office and gets another
sees that label
out of there,
sees
that label in there. It's marketing, so these little extras are costs, but they're very negligible when it comes to.
I want you to turn around and look in the corner of your.
Oh yeah, with all the boxes.
What does it say back there? Says
I've got a box that says District Made.
District Made. I see LAT
Apparel.
And Amazon.
I do have Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon Music.
Got a new video
game. You know, I mean, there's the value right there. Why do all of these successful companies, you know, do that? So that's part of it too. There's a lot of cool things to learn.
That was one of the more successful things that we did that made us differentiated, and we could get that extra dollar or two because they knew that they were going to be packaged for them. They knew that they were going to be. In our case, we did sealed.
Right.
So. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
I freaking love this podcast. It was one of the most useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate the inspiration.
I love doing it. Anybody's welcome to call me or you know, ask specific questions or
So that was great. I said when I read the article, I was like, this is gonna be useful to a lot of people.
Yeah. So here's what you can do is, I don't know if it'll be on there right away. But we will put a link to the article. We'll do a PDF download on the podcast page. I will also add it to our files on the Custom Apparel Startups Facebook group as a PDF, so any of our members will be able to download it.
CASpodcast.com.
CASpodcast.com and the Custom Apparel Startups Facebook group. So, and I would, I know Mark Veal and I would appreciate it if you shared this podcast with somebody. Mm-hmm. So not just people inside the apparel business. I mean, as you can see, we talk a lot about pricing and marketing and niche markets. I think it would appeal to a bunch of different kinds of folks. Okay. Anything else, Mark?
From me, no. This is another one where what do I like to do at the end? I want people to be inspired to do something different to make their business better. And I think that if you've listened to this and you already have a pricing model that you feel is really great, then one, just ask yourself, would I like to do more business, or am I okay where I am? And this is, I guess, is entertainment for you.
Yeah.
I hope so. Most people listening to this is because they want to do better with their business. They want to make more money.
Yeah.
So if you've got a price model you've been using for a while, even if it's for only 6 months or a year, I think you should reevaluate it.
Yeah.
Just take a little bit of time to reevaluate it, read the article, try to make different price models for this. And then I think a great exercise to do would maybe historically go back with, say, if you make three different price models based on the article.
Yeah.
Go back, look at some old jobs you did, price them out.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Versus what you did.
See how it would have gone.
Yeah, and then see how it would have gone and then you can make some decisions. Am I not busy because I'm priced out of the market?
Yeah.
Am I not profitable because when I do my time and materials, I'm way too low?
I'm giving away the farm, yeah.
Yeah, then you can kind of figure out, you know, maybe some problems. And if nothing, I think a great thing that could happen is you do it all and you say, you know what, I was like 90% there.
Yeah.
If I tweak this 10%, I can get 10% more profit, 10% more business, and boom, this podcast changed a life.
That's right. It makes a big difference at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely true. All right, everybody. Thank you very much. This has been Mark Stevenson from Coldesi.
And Mark Viola from Coleman & Company.
Thanks again, Tom Rumbaugh from Coldesi as well. And I hope you guys have a good business.